listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on, McLaughlin out, but it's still labor business as usual of the New York City Central Labor Council.
But first,
there's some rotten tomatoes under McDonald's golden arches.
Oh, and indeed there are.
Joining us now are Romeo Ramirez, who's an organizer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and Mark Rodriguez, who's going to be translating for us, and he's with the Student Farm Worker Alliance.
Thanks for having us on tonight.
Romeo, if you could tell us the conditions that the workers labor under in the fields that provide tomatoes and other produce for McDonald's.
Un día de un trabajador en el campo, bueno, empieza desde las 4 de la mañana y viene regresando desde las 8 de la noche.
So on a typical day for a farm worker, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you might get home as late as 8 o'clock at night.
Uno se tiene que levantar desde esa hora para levantar a cocinar y salir a buscar trabajo porque el sistema de trabajo no es seguro que uno tiene todos los días.
And the reason why you have to wake up that early is because you wake up, you prepare your lunch, and then you go outside to the central parking lot in town, and you basically have to look for a job every day because there's no such thing as a fixed job or fixed employment.
Y si uno agarra trabajo, a uno le llevan desde el lugar donde uno es contratado, llega uno en el trabajo en eso de las 7, pero no empieza uno a trabajar esa hora, empieza uno a trabajar hasta las 10 de la mañana.
And if you do get a job that day, by the time you ride out to the fields, it's about 7 o'clock, but then you don't actually start working until about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Pero todas estas horas que uno estuvo esperando, al trabajador nunca se le reconoce, pero la compañía sí te tenía para utilizarte en cualquier momento que querían.
And all of these hours that you've been outside of your home waiting for a job, riding to the fields and everything, you haven't been paid a penny yet, but the company keeps you there at its beckon and call, ready to work whenever the company wants you to work.
Y cuando uno empieza a trabajar, es cargar una cubeta que pesa 32 libras, y esta cubeta te lo pagan 32.40 centavos por cada cubeta, y para ganarte $50, bueno, un campesino tiene que piscar 2 toneladas.
And then once you do start working, you have to fill a bucket with tomatoes, and that bucket weighs 32 pounds when it's full of tomatoes. And for each of these buckets, you're paid only about 40 cents. So that means that in order to earn $50 in one day, you have to pick over 2 tons of tomatoes.
Y esto significa que un trabajador, si trabaja más de 8 horas, no hay el tiempo por el pago de tiempo extra, no hay ningún beneficio médico, ni aseguranza en el trabajo, ni días festivos pagados.
And this is all, of course, without the right to overtime pay if you work more than 8 hours in a day, which you often do, without any types of benefits or protections of any kind, without any type of health insurance to speak of.
Y no tiene el derecho por ley, está excluido en la acta de relaciones laborales que no protege a unirse a una unión.
And also as farm workers, we are excluded from the National Labor Relations Act from the right to organize and the right to form a union.
Más que eso, en los campos se enfrentan abusos, ya sea a verbal, ya sea físicamente, y hasta casos de esclavitud.
And also in the fields, we encounter things like abuses, physical violence against workers, and in some extreme cases, conditions of modern-day slavery.
Cuando hablamos de esclavitud, nosotros como organización y como miembro de la organización hemos trabajado en descubrir 5 casos en lo cual centenares de trabajadores muchas veces son obligados en contra sus voluntades trabajar en los campos de tomate y en los campos de naranja.
And when we talk about slavery, we are talking about the 6 cases that our organization has helped to uncover since 1997, where thousands of workers have been held against their will, forced to work against their will in the tomato and orange fields.
Son trabajadores que no tienen el derecho a cambiar de casa, no tienen el derecho a cambiar de patrón.
And these are workers who, when they're held in these conditions of slavery, obviously don't have the right to change where they're living. They don't have the right to change jobs or change bosses.
Y son controlados por guardias de los patrones que nadie se escape de este campo.
And they're also under watch by armed guards at the fields.
Y cada persona que está ahí son obligados en los días viernes ir a hacer compras y les cambiar el cheque en la tienda del patrón.
And oftentimes the people in these situations are obligated to do all of their shopping and cash their checks at the stores that are owned by the very bosses and crew leaders who are holding them in these conditions.
Y cuando descambien, ya cuando les van a dar el dinero para atrás, ya les vienen dando $40 o $50 por toda la semana. Ya no les dan completo lo que venía en el cheque.
And oftentimes they'll only get $40 or $50 back from their check and not what they actually worked to earn.
Y la idea de que ya no les dan todo es de que se les está descontando la renta y la deuda que tienen cuando llegaron.
And a lot of times what they use as a pretext to get away with this is that they say that they're deducting the rent and the debt that a lot of people incurred in order to get into this country and to get to Florida. And they say that they're deducting this debt from the paycheck to keep people there.
Y la idea de que les quiten todo esto es porque cada persona que llegó ahí llegó vendido en un precio de $2,000, $2,500, hasta $3,000 por persona que les vendieron a estos patrones.
And a lot of times it's because the people who are in these camps are in debt $2,000 or $3,000 to the coyotes and the crew leaders and other people who help them get to where they are, to Florida.
Y esto es por el tráfico humano que muchas veces son contratados el otro lado de la frontera con la promesa que hay un buen trabajo y buen salario, pero al llegar la historia cambia.
And this is due to situations of human trafficking in which people are promised good jobs on the other side of the border, but then when they get here, they discover that the reality is something different.
Entonces, un campesino hoy en día vive en la miseria, lo que es la pobreza, bajo el nivel de pobreza, y bajo condiciones que hoy en día las grandes corporaciones están subsidiando cada vez ganancias basado en estas pobreza y basado por la explotación.
And so basically a farm worker today lives in misery, lives in sub-poverty conditions, and is doing all of this while the big corporations that purchase tomatoes while they're basically padding the profits of the large corporations that buy many tomatoes from Florida.
Well, since you mentioned that, let me get to the Center for Reflection. I love this name. The Center for Reflection, Education, and Action, CREA, which was commissioned by McDonald's to do a study. And they claim that the suppliers earn an average of $14 to $18 an hour supplying the tomatoes to McDonald's. Well, I'm sure you can dispel that mythology, but do tell us why McDonald's has become the focus of the Coalition of Omokalee Workers campaign.
Bueno, lo que ha dicho McDonald's en el estudio es un estudio definitivamente que nosotros los trabajadores ignoramos, porque primero, un trabajador no gana $14 la hora, ni ganamos muchas veces ni ganar el salario mínimo.
Well, the study, of course, is something that we have totally dismissed and ignored, because we know that as farm workers we don't earn, never mind $14 an hour, a lot of times we don't even earn minimum wage.
Y si fuera así, hasta los bomberos trabajarían en la industria, pero lamentablemente en estos trabajos son trabajadores que han aguantado por siglos y sigan aguantando estos bajos salarios.
And if it was the case that we were making the wages that McDonald's claims that we're making, there would be firemen working in the fields. Everybody would be wanting these jobs. But the fact of the matter is that we are earning sub-poverty wages, and this is the thing. These are the conditions that have been going on for decades in this industry.
Y McDonald's es porque es el comprador mayoritario de tomate en toda la costa de la Florida y en todas las compañías en donde trabajamos.
And the reason why we're going after McDonald's now is because we know that it is a very large purchaser of tomatoes from Florida and from all of the Florida-based tomato companies that we work for.
Y también porque McDonald's tiene el poder de dictar precios baratos a los tomates, y cuando demanda precios baratos afecta al campesino.
And we also know that McDonald's uses its immense purchasing power to dictate that it gets very cheap tomatoes, and we know that this purchasing power puts a downward pressure on wages and working conditions for farm workers.
Y a la misma vez creemos que también tiene el poder en que debe de pagar más por los tomates que compra, y este aumento que pase directamente al trabajador, que básicamente estos son las demandas que estamos pidiendo.
We know that McDonald's has the power to make a change, and we are demanding that they pay more for the tomatoes that they buy, and that increase passes directly to the workers. We know that they can do this, and that's basically one of our main demands that we have of them.
Y lo que estamos pidiendo son tres demandas: un centavo más por cada libra y este centavo que pasa al trabajador como demanda número uno.
And basically we have three demands of McDonald's. First of all, that they pay one more penny per pound of tomatoes that they purchase, and that penny per pound passes directly to the workers.
La segunda demanda es que implemente un código verdadero que asegure los derechos de los campesinos en los trabajos.
The second demand is that McDonald's implement a real code of conduct that guarantees our rights as workers.
Tercera demanda, queremos un diálogo en tres partidos con representantes de los trabajadores y la compañía donde trabajamos y la corporación para monitorear los acuerdos que pueden ser firmados.
And our third demand is that we want a three-way dialogue between ourselves and our organization as representing the workers, the growers who sell to McDonald's, and McDonald's itself, so that we could monitor conditions and also make sure that the accord that we eventually reach with them is being implemented correctly.
And in the remaining time that we have, how can people find out more about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and how can we bend those golden arches and shape them to meet the needs of their current workforce and the pressure that is being put on by the coalition?
That's a good question, Mimi. One of the things that the coalition has had to do here in Immokalee is create its own media, because we know that this story isn't going to be covered in CNN or CBS or anything like that. So one thing that people can do to start finding out more about this issue and to get involved is definitely check out the coalition's website, which is www.ciw-online.org. And once people are at that site, you can see videos that the workers have produced about the conditions, about the campaign. You can contact us for postcards that we can send you, and you can fill them out and mail them to McDonald's as a sign that you are supporting this campaign. We also have other resources and materials like manager letters that people can print out and take to their local McDonald's. Yeah, there's just a wealth of information there on the website, and people can contact us through there and just find out more ways to get involved.
And they should also look for the many demonstrations that the Student Farm Worker Alliance is sponsoring, which are very, very helpful all throughout the country.
Exactly. Student Farm Worker Alliance, we just came out of a weekend of over 40 actions in 40 different communities around the country, where students and young people, as the target market of McDonald's, rose up and said, you know, we're not going to just blindly accept your marketing. We're going to stand with the workers and demand that you work with them to address the human rights crisis happening in the fields. So definitely, this campaign is definitely ongoing, definitely long-term, and is definitely escalating until we start getting a better response from McDonald's.
And certainly with organizers like Romeo Ramirez and incredible supporters and activists such as Mark Rodriguez, who has been kind enough to translate and is intimately involved in the struggle. We'll have you back a long time before we again claim victory, as we did against Taco Bell, but this time in the McDonald's campaign. And it's been a pleasure to speak with, again, Romeo Ramirez, organizer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and Mark Rodriguez, student and member of the Farm Worker Alliance. Thank you.
Bueno, muchísimas gracias por este espacio y agradecemos a Pacifico Radio.
Gracias.
Oh, yes. Thanks a lot for the space and for having us on, and we thank you and Pacifico Radio.
Gracias por todo.
Buena
suerte. Well, indeed, haven't we worked on our knees too long, from the farm workers who are fighting against a virtual system of modern-day slavery to Herman Benson, who is the founder and secretary of the Association of Union Democracy, one of the most pertinent organizations who has fought on behalf of workers to democratize the institutions that they created and all too often don't work in the interests of the working class people. And Herman, it's a pleasure to have you with us on Building Bridges.
Herman, we just did a piece on farm workers in Florida, and I was thinking throughout that piece of how one of the crimes that Brian McLaughlin is accused of is basically pocketing the money for an immigration coordinator in the Central Labor Council. Do you have any additions to that of what you think is relevant in the indictment against Brian McLaughlin of the New York City Central Labor Council?
Brian McLaughlin has been stealing money from everybody. So there's no particular relevance, I guess, with farm work. Why not steal from them, too? I mean, if he's been accused of taking money from the employers, taking money from the union as a union, taking money from union members, stealing money from the city, and bid-bricking on lighting contracts. He went a little too far when he stole money from the Little League. I mean, it's getting to the point where I was astounded that he would be either that stupid or greedy that he would have to, after taking $2 million from everybody else, he takes $95,000 from the Little League in Queens. You can manacle stealer, so I don't think stealing from one particular place has any more significance than the other.
And what, in your estimation, has been the response of the Central Labor Council and the labor movement in general?
The labor movement in general has never had any response. The labor movement has taken no responsibility whatsoever for corrupt practices. The problem with the labor movement in general is, number one, they refuse even to recognize that there's any problem, although there is a major problem, of which the derelictions of Brian McLaughlin are only most recent example. But insofar as there is a problem, and they are forced to recognize it, they simply say it's not our responsibility, it's up to the government to do it. So they won't do anything about it. But it even goes further. I mean, anybody that speaks up about corruption in the labor movement is marked lousy, is retaliated against, and his union career is ended. I mean, take Ed Ott. Ed Ott, who may be a very wonderful fellow, as far as I know. But if he had spoken up about corruption, even in the most general terms, in the recent years, I'm not saying he knew anything about Brian McLaughlin, but if he had said anything about corruption in general, he wouldn't be anywhere today. He'd be out. He'd be out on his ears. As a matter of fact, I got a challenge for them. They want to do something about corruption. Well, they got to do more than talk about it. I mean, right here in New York City, right as we speak, right now, there are two major scandals of corruptions in unions affiliated to Central Labor Council. There's Rufus Local 8, where the local itself just was pleaded guilty in state court on charges of corruption involving domination by organized crime. The Amalgamated Transit Union, just a few weeks ago, Local 1181, the big local of school bus drivers in New York City, the secretary treasurer of that local just pleaded guilty on corruption charges, together with Mary the Horse, charges that are related to mob domination of Local 81. These two things are going on right this minute. They're still in court. So if the Central Labor Council want to do anything about corruption more than talk about it, let them have, at the next Executive Council meeting, appoint a committee to investigate the charges and the trials against Rufus Local 88 and Amalgamated Transit Union 1181 and make some recommendations about what they propose to do about corruption that's right in progress this very moment. I say that as a challenge to the Central Labor Council, because anybody that would propose it, I believe, wouldn't last for 10 seconds as a labor leader in New York City.
Well,
that's the problem.
Brian McLaughlin. McLaughlin was president of the New York City Central Labor Council and actually hasn't yet stepped down despite the indictment, but is on a long-term sabbatical. And Ed Ott was the assistant and is now temporarily acting and possibly for the future will become the head of the Central Labor Council.
Yeah, the leaders of the Central Labor Council, Ed Ott, and then Dennis Hughes, who was also president of the State Labor Council, is now on one of the leaders of the Central Labor Council in New York City. What their reaction to the Brian McLaughlin scandal has been, on the one hand, they want to have training sessions for the people who are running the Central Labor Council. What do we want to train them about? Do you have to have a training session to tell people thou shalt not steal? Well, they're talking about they need a code. They need a code of ethics. The FL-CIO is overloaded with codes of ethics. I'm not talking about the code of ethics that's about thousands of years old, thou shalt not steal. I'm talking about the code of ethics adopted by the FL-CIO back in 1958. It's gone through several editions. In 1995, there's a special code for Brian McLaughlin and the leaders of the Central Labor Council. The AFL-CIO adopted in 1995 a code of ethical practices for AFL-CIO officers and representatives, which covers the Central Labor Council and the State Labor Councils. All they have to do is enforce the code. They don't need more codes. They don't need training sessions. They have to recognize the problem, and they have to do something about it. But it goes even further. They have to give protection to people inside the labor movement that are ready to blow the whistle on this stuff. I mean, Brian McLaughlin has been taking money for years from everybody everywhere. Do you mean to say that nobody noticed anything? Nobody suspected anything? Who's given the evidence to the government? That forms the basis of this trial. The problem is that these people who would know about it, or who would suspect about it, know very well, as they open their mouth inside the labor movement, their careers or maybe even their jobs would be in peril in the labor movement. That's the problem. They don't recognize the problem. They don't want to do anything about it. And there's retaliation against people who do want to do something about it. That's got to change.
Well, one group that is doing something about it and has for many years is the Association for Union Democracy. And if you could tell us just a bit more about the association.
Well, the association has been in existence since 1969, and I could define it as a civil liberties organization for people in the labor movement. It focuses on the rights of members inside their union to free speech, fair elections, due process and trials, and fair hiring. I mean, we feel that members of the labor movement, workers in unions, should have the same rights as union members in their unions, as they have as citizens of the United States under the First Amendment of the Constitution, the rights of democracy. And when you give it to these people and you guarantee them these rights, we'll have an effective force inside the labor movement to do a battle against corruption.
And
that's been our experience.
And if somebody's in a union and there's a problem there, what kind of services can the AUD give them?
Well, the first thing we can do, we can offer advice on how to handle themselves and how to survive. We have literature on what your rights are and how you can enforce them. And unfortunately, on a small scale, we do have a very small number of dedicated attorneys who will help unionists with union democracy problems. I regret to say it's very small, so we can't offer too much in that respect, but we can offer some help. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can visit our website, uniondemocracy.org. Very simple, uniondemocracy.org. And that will tell you more about us and how you can get in touch with us.
Well, I guess local three electricians, hopefully they get in touch with you, because clearly they have no recourse against favoritism or discrimination in their hall. And the reason I picked on them is because IBEW Local 3 was Brian McLaughlin's power base.
And just as an aside, Tommy Van Osdell just stepped down from presidency of Local 3 just 10 days before the indictment. That means there's a new president, and we have a big question as to why this happened right now.
Uh-huh. Well, we will continue to look at these issues, and we must commend people like Herman Benson, who for decades now have been working to establish democratic principle within and democratize the organized labor's movement. And again, we've been speaking with Herman Benson from the Association of Union Democracy, and we thank you for joining us. And your website?
Our website, uniondemocracy.org.
Easy to remember.
And easy to use. Do so.
And this has been Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And you can reach us at knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org.